are you today? From Nigeria, Afropop saxophonist Orlando Julius and the Heliocentrics with In the Middle. It's from his 2014 album, Jayede Afro. He's still going strong at age 74. This is Lead Stories. I'm Utrice Lead, and guess what? It is Free Your Mind Friday, and you decide where the conversation goes. Put it out there, put it on the table, but let's encourage conversation. Let's hear what you're thinking about this week's crop of ridiculous stories, and let's see where you want to take it. At 888-874-4888. What do you think of the week's events, and do you have something else that you want to talk about and you want us to know, information you wish to share that would be of great benefit to us? Call in. Let us know. 888-874-4888. I really enjoy Free Your Mind Fridays because we get to know what is in the minds of people out there. And there's so much that we learn. It's, I think, one of the best peer education programs anywhere on the planet. We bring to the table our expertise, our experience, and even just our curiosity. But it is important for us to get in the habit of presenting our views, not caring really what people will think, whether they agree or whether they disagree. That is not the issue. The issue is to present your arguments, your information, your thoughts in a cogent way that allows us to kind of navigate where you're going with your thoughts, and hopefully we could connect. And it's very important to be prepared to be disagreed with. It's okay. It's wonderful, in fact. Sometimes in disagreeing, people add greater information to your reservoir than you would expect. And so that's the spirit we come to with Free Your Mind Friday. The idea is to just expand our minds and to become more and more accustomed to presenting our views in public. That's great. Henry from Chicago, you get to start us off today. How you doing, hey, Henry?
I'm doing good. How about you, Utrice?
I'm hanging in. I'm good.
I think we all are. Wanted to update you on some things here in Chicago. Yesterday, went to the hearing of Officer Jason Van Dyke in regards to the case that he has against him in first-degree murder charges for against Laquan McDonald, the young man he shot 2 years ago. The judge apparently had denied the motion for dismissal of the case. But what's interesting, though, is I was listening to, you know, the judge allowed the prosecution and defense to have their argument. But what was interesting, though, was when Van Dyke's lawyer came up to make his case about dismissal of the trial, he did cite some things in Illinois law that basically allows, you know, officers or anybody who is of the legal aspect who was allowed to carry a weapon to basically shoot and kill anybody, no matter what the circumstances, because all they have to do is basically say, "I thought he had a weapon," and it kind of opened my eyes to that, because I was like, "Wow, this is interesting," because I mean, he cited the law and everything. And so as I'm listening to this, and, you know, I was actually surprised the judge actually dismissed the motion, because I thought he was going to do that off the basis of that. But it brought me to a realization that, and I hate to say this, but I honestly think he's going to get off at this trial, Mr. Jason Van Dyke. I think he's going to be found not guilty. Even though it's going to trial, I think he's going to be found not guilty, because the laws or the system protects him from, you know, being charged with first-degree murder. So I just got a feeling that, you know, I know a lot of people were kind of, you know, satisfied with it, but I got this bad feeling that it's going to go to trial and it's going to end up in a acquittal of Officer Van Dyke, you know, based off the fact that, you know, history, these cases that we've seen, these high profile cases that we've seen all across the country, I think it's just going to end up the same way. And I hope I'm wrong. I really, really hope I'm wrong. But I just got a feeling that this is not going to end well in regards to justice for the community.
Well, this is, I appreciate that the lawyer is making his case. He's defending his client, and that's what lawyers are supposed to do, defend the client to the fullest. And so they come up with all this kind of stuff to rationalize the actions of their client in causing the death of a man. Okay. Now, I kid you not about this case I covered. It's a matter of where you take the case, and already what he's saying, he's deflecting. He's already making the case that you should disregard procedure, police procedure, established law as it pertains to law enforcement officers. He's right off the bat discarding the history of law enforcement officers always contending, we thought he had a gun. My life was in danger. We've had repeated studies and reports done. I referenced this many times, including the president's report that he had ordered on police force, use of police force. Remember that 21st century report that was commissioned? They delivered it, and it just went to hell. No, it never saw the light of day. Discard the fact that you have so many moves made to disband police officers, police precincts or police stations, because officers in certain stations statistically are shown as more prone to these kinds of crimes than in others. In other words, there is a systemic problem. So he could go ahead and make his case and try to defend his client all he wants. But when you have a system, including, by the way, I forgot, reports repeatedly showing corruption in the court, prosecutorial corruption, judicial corruption that would tend to produce the result that you just talked about, finding officers not guilty, right? And Chicago was just recently the test case for this argument. So don't worry about what the new law, the newly found law, says. There are many other laws that mitigate that, that throw that out the window in the hands, if people who observe this trial can detect right away. And I think that's exactly what they ought to do. Watch this case very closely. You may recall just recently, I'm forgetting the name of the officer, it's a white female officer who killed this man. I'm sorry?
Eddie Shelby.
That's right. I was trying to recall the name of the officer. You see how they orchestrated the outcome. I called it exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I remember that. It is not because I'm psychic. Mm-hmm. It is not because I'm so brilliant. It's because I pay attention to history.
Yep.
I called it exactly. The media got into this. They were drawn into this to make the case, to prejudice a jury. There are all kinds of arguments about what went wrong in that case to produce the exact outcome that I predicted. And you just said it. I mean, you don't have extraordinary psychic powers.
No.
No, you paid attention to history.
Yes,
it's there.
And that's the whole thing about this case that just really, it just really bothers me, you know, because of the fact that there were a lot of people at the hearing yesterday, and it was more than the number of people where I was at when I went to the one 2 months ago. So, you know, this case is getting more traction as far as publicity. But, you know, just the reaction of people just saying, oh, wow, we're going to get a trial. And it's like, and I'm sitting there like, oh, God, you guys have not read the news lately about these other cases that's happened. I'm like, I just feel like this is not going to end well for justice in our community. And I got a feeling that it's not going to end the way we think it's going to end.
Well, let's see. We always hold out hope, and in my view, unnecessarily, because we are thinking that the system actually means to deliver justice. The Justice Department said it doesn't mean. It doesn't mean you're going to get justice. We've had report after report, commissioned and uncommissioned. We have had enough of the crap. And at some point, we have to demonstrate that we're serious. At some point, we have to demonstrate that we're serious about this business of justice. I mean, Eric Holder was the head of the Justice Department's Civil Rights Division when Amadou Diallo was killed in such an atrocious way. No justice. The case was literally laid out. No justice there at all. So I say, let's see whether the community insists on justice and call to account those people who are responsible for delivering justice and assuring justice. Thanks, Henry, for getting us started today. Thanks for your call. Jay from New York, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon, Utrice. How are you feeling?
I'm hanging in. How about you?
I'm doing quite well, thank you.
All right.
First question I have for you is there any update in regards to Mega Evers College?
That was one of the segments I was hoping that we can do today to remind people that we have a job to do, and it's not going to so inconvenience anybody. But we have to look at the objective here. The objective is to send a signal to this errant college leader that we are watching him, and we are not going to permit the insult. We are not going to permit an insult to the name and legacy of Medgar Evers by having Hillary Clinton and her backers and whoever it is came up with some money to stage the commencement exercise on June 8th of Medgar Evers College at the Barclay Center in downtown Brooklyn, which is now a first-class location. Major stars and entertainers and so forth perform there now. How this came about was horrendous enough in that the staff did not know, the students did not know, that she was to appear as the commencement speaker and beyond that to be awarded an honorary doctorate. This is just pathetic. And every person listening to this program, and we are, I see so many people joining the effort now, every person who believes in justice, civil rights, and particularly the sanctity of Medgar Evers' name and life. Here is a person who gave his life fighting racism, white supremacy in this country, assassinated in our interest and in our name. And I don't mean just black people. Medgar Evers was a dedicated man to all people, seeking justice, seeking to build a better society. This college that bears his name waged a struggle. It had to wage a strong struggle to be established. And when it succeeded, it selected to do the right thing, to name this college after Medgar Evers. It's smack in the middle of central Brooklyn. And without this college, a whole bunch of people who are doing well today and who will do well tomorrow coming into this college, that would not have been possible. To insult not just Medgar Evers' name and the tradition of this college, the way it came into being through community struggle, having to go up against the established order, the City University of New York, to carve out this space uniquely geared toward the educational needs of African Americans and people of all races, really. But let's not deny that it was about fortifying the opportunities of African Americans and African people, period. Now, our job is to call 347-730-3620. That's an organization called Comocoda. It's a Haitian group that has been fighting for years now to bring attention and justice to the people of Haiti, whose land was plundered and raped by Hillary and Bill Clinton. That is a documented fact. Hillary Clinton also has other crimes to answer for as it pertains to African Americans and the black world. We have itemized these things in our series on the Clinton Foundation. Only now do we see a kind of reluctance to verify this by the investigative powers of the United States. We haven't stopped the investigation. In fact, more is coming next week that will blow your mind. The extent of the criminality of the Clintons and this money laundering scheme that they set up, calling it a foundation. So we have to support the Haitian community, the African American community, and all justice loving people to oppose this decision, this underhanded decision that apparently was a unilateral decision by the president of Medgar Evers College to decide that Hillary Clinton should come and hang out with the darkies. As she begins to launch or relaunch herself as being important to the world. We should deny her that opportunity. 347-730-3620 or 718-440-6892. And let's get this movement going. It is already going, but let's not be comfortable with that. Let's inconvenience ourselves and make a massive showing there to drive the point home. She is, in our community, persona non grata.
Well, all I can say is, you know, I made the call, and, you know, I just wanted to know what the update was, because, you know, it's bad enough that you have the character going overseas and pushing people out of the way. You know what I mean? That right there was such a Bush League move. I just couldn't believe that he did it. You know what I mean? How do you go to NATO and try to bully the people of NATO? I mean, it's just becoming more and more insane every day as time passed with this so-called presidency.
Now, yeah, but that's what we have. And the question is, what are we doing to set up an alternative to this garbage? What are we doing?
Besides observing from the sidelines. I don't know what the American people are doing, but it's absolutely embarrassing. And at some point in time, I mean, I would hope that they will be able to, as one would say, convict someone in regards to something, what's going on. Now it seems that the son-in-law is now under investigation for something.
Are you surprised? I'm amazed that the daughter, his wife, isn't also. The whole Trump band and their friends and whoever else is in their circle. Look, we can't talk about hope anymore.
No,
let's be clear. You got to create your hope. So
yeah,
try your best not to talk about it. Try your best to do something about it. It is crazy to me that we still talk about hope. Hope that things, in the face of the evidence that we have, in the face of the history we have, we're still talking about hope. No, there is no hope unless you create it. So that goes for the Medgar Evers protest. It goes for the Clinton Foundation. It goes for Trump and his insanities, which we spotted right off the bat. We should be under no illusions of hope when it comes to Donald Trump. That's done. It's established that there's no hope. We'd be crazy to hang on to hope. The only hope you could hang on to is the hope you create yourself. That is the essence of liberation and struggle. Create your own hope. Thanks, Jay. Great to hear from you today. Well, looky, looky. I can't believe my eyes. Sarah, is that you?
Yes, it is. But it's not the Sarah I think that you know. I love to hear her also. She is so wonderful and so deep. But I'm not that one.
Well, you are Sarah, and so you share good qualities with the Sarah that we know. How are you today?
Yes. Well, I'm doing fine, and you sound great. So
Thank you. You're
doing better and better each day.
I'm hanging on to that. I'm creating my hope.
Well, that's wonderful. That's the best thing to do. That's positive thinking. And that's wonderful. What I wanted to speak about, yesterday there was a guy who called up and he was into the word phenol. And it got sickening after a while. And I want him to know, and I want to speak on, you know, people want to put the word slavery and parallel that with Africans. But when Britain 2007 celebrated the ending of slavery, they said the Atlantic slave trade. They were not necessarily speaking of Africans off the Gulf of Guinea. They were speaking of the English, Scot, Welsh, and Irish who were enslaved by their own people, Big Ben, and what was the other big prison where they took them out, and they brought them over to America and to the Caribbean to pick the sugar cane and then send it over to England. And what I remember, because I recorded it, the Scot and the Welsh, they were very happy, and these are the descendants of the former slaves from Europe. They said that their people told them about slavery and being enslaved in America and also in Caribbean. And I think that the guy who was talking about the Fino needs to know his background itself is probably one of slavery.
Are you referring to David from Brooklyn who talked about phenotypes?
Yes, that one that was talking, yes, the one talking okay. about the phenotypes. Yeah, and I wanted also to say that when we speak of Hillary Rodham Clinton, I remember when they were talking, she was running against Barack Obama, and the London Times, which I do read the London Times, I've been reading it since I was a child. They spoke about her background, Rodham. They explained that Rodham was like a slave himself in Ireland, and he got a job on the Rodham plantation. Prior to that, he had no last name. He was just an Irish person who was wanting something to do. So he did have that. They gave him, well, he works on the Rodham plantation. Let's call him Rodham. That's her history. She has a slave history her own self.
And so, well, you know, I wouldn't trust any historical data given by Hillary Clinton. She has been many things.
Yes.
You know, she has been many things. And she can safely claim a record of history in her family because she's now totally immune. So she has the benefit. She can dip her toe in for political purposes and take it right back out of the slavery pool. That story that is constantly talked about, you know, is to bond with her so-called political base. I want to talk a bit about the phenotype word as I understood it from David's presentation yesterday. And I interpreted it as reference to how people were classified. That's how they developed a, quote, phenotype. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, many blacks did pass for white.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, that was based on the phenotype they presented, as opposed to people who were absolutely, on the face of it, Africoid.
Mm-hmm.
African people. So the scientists refer to this differentiation based on characteristics developed in order to classify people.
And
the phenotype then came into play. What is the quality of your hair? What is the width of your nose?
Mm-hmm.
How high is your forehead? In other words, how close to whiteness, as we define whiteness, how close are you? Because that's been the nature of our history. We always compared to the standard, which is what they designed and call white.
Well, you see, I never did pay much attention to that as I got the baccalaureate and the master's and then another degree as well. Never did go into the word pheno at all, but I do know when you speak of the slavery, I do remember that Virginia allowed blacks, these were blacks that you could discern were actually blacks, owning slaves from Europe. They were enslavers, and I think their permission to own these slaves was quelled and stopped about 1850 or around between 1800 and 1850. Prior to that, blacks owned, discernible blacks owned slaves in America. And that guy, David or whatever who his name is, he could very well be a slave from that background as well. But I never did pay any attention to what they were measuring and other things because, you know, you have to consider the source of that kind of junk.
Because eventually you have to read this book.
Somebody knows, so therefore, oh man, please.
Oh yes, so,
no,
yes,
I
yes.
I never went with that. I never did. But I just appreciate letting it be known that there were many. In fact, you alluded to it for a minute when you were talking a few minutes ago. There were whites who were many whites were slaves in this country.
Well, if you read Theodore Allen's book, The Invention of the White Race. It's an exquisite work.
I wrote it down.
He specifically talks about the word white. In 1619, there were no whites in America when the Africans were brought here. He identifies the specific year, the specific time when this word white popped up as part of this notion that we had whites.
What were they, what were they calling those whites that were over here picking the sugar cane and they were white, come out of England, Scotland, Wales, and Ireland? What did they call them?
Well, they called them Dutchmen. They called them Europeans. They called them Irish. They called them a name associated with where they came from, but not white. There were Germanic people. There were people of Eastern Europe. And according to where they came from, that's the nationality, if you will. That's what they were called. But the word white did not exist here, even when Africans were brought here. They never referred to themselves as white. This is a really important work.
Mm-hmm.
The invention of the white race. And he explains why this notion of whiteness was invented as a mechanism of to set up social and political and economic control systems.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Lutrice, may I say this if I might, and that is that prior to the 1600s, 15 and 1400s, blacks coming from the Gulf of Guinea and other areas across from Brazil up the coast going into South Carolina and then back and forth, and I believe his name is Hugh Thomas from England, wrote about how these were actually Africans. They were not enslaved. They had boats, and they actually, traded with the original people from those areas of South America back and forth. Oh, let's say from the 8th and 9th century, and then also you take your Somalis. They were great sailors, and they actually helped the Irish, the Scots, to get a name because the Scots were so ignorant. They didn't even know their name, so they gave them some plaids. And you probably know that Africans can tell who you are by your plaid on you somewhere, your wrapper, your scarf, or what have you. That determines your tribe, your name. So, you know, did you know that?
Oh, yes, because that was the whole point of Ivan van Sertebos' work. They came before Columbus. It was also the seminal point in Sheikh Anta Diop's work. These things have been established that centuries before Columbus even sailed the seas, they've been sailing the seas using the currents.
Oh, yes, indeed. In fact, we knew the currents. And so Hugh Thomas, in The Rivers of Gold, he's one of my favorite writers as well and a historian, spoke and wrote about it as well. But I really want the guy, David, to know the true history because he probably has a slave background. Even if he uses the word Fino or whatever he uses, he needs to know. And I talked to some young white men, and they were surprised when their Scott heritage grandfathers and great-grandfathers mentioned to them that they probably came from a slave background. They were
well, you see, the word slave itself, do you know the etymology of the word slave, where it came from?
Yugoslavia.
There you go. So it is not to be an automatic thing that when you say the word slave, you mean black.
That's
quite
right.
The opposite. Slave, the word slave comes from Slav.
Yes, Czechoslovakia and Yugoslavia. Mm-hmm.
So it, throughout Europe, you have all kinds of records confirming that the enslavement of people, the genocide of people, predicated on, you know, fighting those who resisted being enslaved. So the word Slav became slave.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then the word slave automatically was transmuted to mean black people forced into servitude. And it is not just confined to black people. That's a very important point. So
that
wonderful
is.
To talk with you, Sarah.
Thank you so much.
I'm so glad that you called in today and shared some heavy info with us today. But I remind you, get a copy of that book by, I just slipped my mind again. I have to pay attention to that. I'm forgetting too many names all of a sudden. Theodore Allen, The Invention of the White Race. And there's another accompanying book that I would highly recommend, How the Irish Became White, by Noel Ignatieff. That's a fascinating book. And every Irish person needs to read that book. The notion of whiteness in America is different from any other part of the world. Thanks. Sorry, finish your thought.
I just wanted to hear you speak about that book, and I can get it from my library as well. What did you say the name of it? I know you gave us The Invention of the White Race. Was that Hemingway?
That's by Theodore Allen.
Okay, Allen. Mm-hmm. And the other one?
How the Irish Became White by Noel, N-O-E-L, Ignatieff, I-G-N-A-T-I-E-V.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, the people who had a really good handle on this issue and a hemispheric view of it, Sheikh Anta Diop, you got to have his books, Civilization or Barbarism. That is the big kahuna right there. And
wow.
You have any number of works, but the best one, I think, for getting a hemispheric view, which will explain Brazil and other parts south of us, would be by Ivan Van Sertima.
His book. And you know who else, Eutree? What's his name? Lerone Bennett. Bennett wrote that they came before Columbus, and he wrote it with the help of Johnson, who owned Ebony Magazine prior to Ivan Van Sertima even.
Yeah, he was the editor-in-chief of Ebony Magazine, so he had a good source of funding immediately available to him. But he did quite a lot of historical books, and I'm so glad that you're so eager to put your hands on these records. Thanks so much for your call. 888-874-4888. I don't know if, is Harvey still with us? Okay, he's still not. Okay, you got disconnected, Harvey.
I'm here.
Oh, you're Hi. There. Okay. Hi. Hello.
Hi, hello, wonderful Utrecht.
Hello, wonderful Harvey. A lot's happening in your neck of the woods, I see.
That's right. Well, we all love and need your guidance and wisdom, and thanks for being you.
I need guidance and wisdom, too.
Well, you're great. We all love you very much.
Thank you.
I'd like to share some thoughts about why it's important to stop our use of nuclear energy, if that's okay.
Sure.
As I see it, the biggest problem with nuclear energy is that nuclear power plants are electric grid powered. They need an external source of electricity to power the plant's functions. For example, America's 50 nuclear plants rely on the national electric grid to supply electricity that's needed to power the plant's water pumps that circulate cool water around the reactors so that they don't go into critical meltdown, nuclear meltdown. And here in California, the Diablo Canyon Nuclear Power Plant pumps 2.5 billion, that's with a B, billion gallons of seawater to cool its two reactors each and every day. The electric grid also powers the plant's control rooms, spent fuel rod storage pools, dry casket, spent fuel rod storage containers, water, cooling towers, and nuclear power plant equipment. Unfortunately, electric grids are vulnerable to powerful earthquakes like we experience here in California. The electric grid is also vulnerable to solar flares from the sun called coronal mass ejections that could fry the grid and overload it with too much energy. There's also the danger of electromagnetic pulse weapons that could also overload and close down the electric grid. And most recently, there are cyber attacks by hackers that could shut off the electric grid. The current global ransomware heist is a good example of a cyber attack on our nation's internet infrastructure. So nuclear power plants are supposed to have at least 7 days' worth of fuel on hand to power the plant so they don't experience a Fukushima-like nuclear meltdown that Japan's experts say could never happen. Yes. So simply put, America's nuclear plants are electric grid vulnerable, and it's time to divest from America's nuclear vulnerability and reinvest in clean, safe, renewable energy like solar power, geothermal energy, as well as wind and wave power if we want to secure a safe energy future for us and our kids.
Well, let me ask you. You saw what just happened about 2 weeks ago with the collapse of a portion of the Hanford site. And we did a series, I should say Paul DiRienzo did a series. He's been covering nuclear issues for a long time. He has not been able to get to the site, as have the nuclear and environmental activists, but a significant portion of the site collapsed, and the government, of course, is insisting that there has been no negative side effect, except we don't know that for sure. So what is, in your view, how would what you just proposed and what you just reported on, how does that relate to the plants already built that are now defunct? The spent fuel rods are still emitting nuclear energy into the atmosphere, into the land, into the rivers. How do you see what you just said, what you just described as an alternative to nuclear energy, but what application does it have to the nuclear sites which are crumbling, the nuclear waste which is leaching into the soil, leaching into the air, leaching into the crops? Most of this happening on the land of Native Americans, and they can't seem to get any traction at all from the government in trying to limit or trying to dispose of the nuclear waste properly.
Yes, well, This is the big problem. The nuclear plants are extremely old and vulnerable to any number of problems. And the government, you know, has a special thing where you can't sue them over nuclear plants. It's dirty energy. It's dangerous energy. Look at Fukushima. It's still ongoing. There were four meltdowns at the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant in 2011, and yet they have to keep the cores, the smoldering cores, covered with water, which they dump into the ocean and put radiation into the ocean. It's bad all around. The reason that they still have the spent nuclear fuel rods in the plants is because no state wants to take it, to take the spent fuel rods, because collectively, when put all together, they could create an incredible hazard and also, once again, leach radioactivity into the groundwater and aquifers. It's a bad idea. It's always been a bad idea. And that's why the government states that you can't sue them. And there's no one supply of energy that has more cover-up than the nuclear energy field. It's really... It's the worst thing that could have happened to America, as far as I'm concerned. And now that the grid is so vulnerable and old itself, the infrastructure is so old, it turns out that nuclear plants have to be powered by the grid, because if they go online, you have to keep the reactors cool. You have to circulate the water around the reactors. And so the whole thing is the worst boondoggle you can imagine. And, you know, you always think of an enemy. Well, they don't have to fly missiles over to America and bomb it. They can just, cyber attacks could generate from anywhere and close down the grid, which would put all the nuclear plants in jeopardy of meltdown. So it really is I think that we should immediately move to divest from these companies and use our government funds to clean up the mess and close these plants down, and really reinvest in safe, clean, renewable energy, because every day that all those plants are open, America is vulnerable. And, you know, when we had the Three Mile Island, or in Russia they had the Chernobyl, and in Japan the Fukushima accident, they don't just stop. I mean, it's a terrible, terrible thing. Many people die when these things happen. Thousands and thousands of people died in the Chernobyl thing, and also in Japan there's an incredible amount. And everything, once things become radioactive, radioactivity is actually the most lethal thing that could happen to human beings. It's we can't take very much of it before our body goes down. Mm-hmm. So it's such a bad idea, and in the name of saving America and the world, I think that we should lead the way in moving to clean, renewable energy, which we have the technology now. It's not that we don't have it, and we can move away from this death-ridden form of destruction that is called nuclear power.
Thank you so much for your commentary today, Harvey. It's worth a lot to pay attention to. Thank you so much.
Please.
From Virginia, Beatrice, you are on the air, and you will be our last caller today, I'm afraid.
Well, that's fine. I was listening to everyone, but before I even start, I'd like to say hello to everyone in the PRN network and family.
And thank you.
Yes, and I love to hear you speak, and I'm so glad that you're healthy.
I'm fighting.
Yes, you
and
are.
I'm leaning very heavily on people's good thoughts and wishes and prayers. It's wonderful, and I receive them in the spirit that they're offered. I thank you so much.
And in that, and what you said, I think that all of us need each other in light of what's going on. And I'm glad, honestly, that Donald Trump is president, because I feel that we need to see how this country feels about us, poor people, black people, people who want to pretend that they have power. We have to understand how this system works, because it is a system that can be dismantled, but that's only if we work together and help each other out. You know, we all are not monolithic. We all have our own personalities. you know, but we have to set aside and become grown-ups and help each other out and understand that this is going to be a big fight because we're fighting for our children and our generations to survive. And the message I want to give, the message I would like to leave is we have to grow up.
We have to grow up. How about that? Well, it couldn't be more blunt than that. And it's the absolute truth. We got to grow up. I just talked about don't just hope. Create your own hope.
Exactly. And I think a lot of us want to, you know, believe that things will get better. Well, if Hillary Clinton did become president, we'll still be sleeping like, you know, when Obama was president. And look what happened to Flint. People worry about what happened in Manchester. What about the children in Flint? What about the people that lived in New York and we were poisoned, lead poisoned? So we have to grow up and accept the truth, what it is, and decide, hey, I have children and grandchildren. I want a better life for them because they're going to ask me, what did I do? So we have to grow up and accept fate the way it is. But let me stop because I can go on and on about it. But I love you. I love you, Utrecht.
Thank you, but it's
everybody.
Truth, though. You're speaking the truth. This is the point.
But the thing is, no one wants to accept the truth. You see, people don't want, you know what they tell me? I got to say this. I got to squeeze this in. Well, maybe it's not in the cards, or God doesn't want me. Stop using religion. Oh, my God. Let me tell you, I just want to jump out the window whenever I hear people that call me an atheist. Well, so be it. I love God, but Jesus Christ, let's move forward. Let's find solutions. Oh, maybe it's not in it. Maybe God wants us. Are you serious? But you know what? I'm the one that causes trouble. I'm not supposed to think like this. Let's be in harmony. Meanwhile, we're getting shot down police. We don't have any economic power. We don't have any communities. We don't have any leaders. Let's get real about this. I mean, our children are looking up to us. And then we're complaining the children are not complying because we're not setting examples. But let me stop. Let me calm down. It's the weekend. I got to have fun, get my groove on, and enjoy myself. But we have to grow up.
Well, you know what? What we would call what you said in the 70s, we would call it truth.
Well, people
truth.
Don't like truth.
Truth,
like
that's
truth.
Right. T-R-O-O-F, truth.
Yeah, they don't
I'm
like
so
it.
Glad,
people hate
I'm so glad that you called in today. And keep in touch and pass the word around about this program and the station. We're trying to build community here, and it seems to be working. Thanks so much for your call. That brings us to the end of our program today. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Alternative Visions with the great Dr. Jack Rasmus. You can't miss that program. You can reach me via email at leadstories, L-E-I-D, stories at gmail.com. And it was so wonderful hearing from you today. I really, really cherish our time together. Stay tuned. I did say stay tuned. Pardon me. I'm kind of getting old. A pleasure always and a great privilege to be in your company. And I want you over the weekend to make a very special effort to surround yourselves with well-meaning people, positive people who bring positive dimension to your life. If not, get your sneakers ready, lace them up, and run like hell away from them. We'll see each other on Monday. Thank you so much for joining me, and thank you for the pleasure of your company. Bye-bye.